Working Cows Podcast, episode 198.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network, here with another episode for you guys. Really excited to be joined today by Dallas Mount. Dallas, of course, is the CEO of Ranch Management Consultants. They are behind the Ranching for Profit School, the Executive Link Alumni Program, and today we are talking to Dallas about a new program they have focused on succession planning, a succession planning workshop, the curriculum created by Dave Pratt and co-taught by Dallas Mount and Dave Pratt and others that will be coming in throughout the 3-day course in late September, early October. So wanted to talk to him about that opportunity. There will be a link in the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/198, about this opportunity. But for now, we're going to dive into this discussion with Dallas about succession planning. So Dallas, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast. Welcome back.
You bet, Clay. Always excited to be on.
I know that Brian Alexander's keeping track of who's been on more, you or him, but he's got his own podcast now, so I don't think he needs to worry about that so much.
You know, I have little victories in life, and beating Brian Alexander at something is something I can aspire to.
Yeah. I see the tally marks on your whiteboard there behind you. You know,
there we go. Who's been on more. You got it.
But really, really excited to talk to you today about succession planning. I guess we're back to people management, Dallas. We did get you on one time to talk about the grazing principles, but now we're back to people and talking about people. So could you kind of just lay out your vision for why this matters and what it looks like when it's done well?
Yeah, you bet. So why it matters? I mean, gosh, it's kind of at the core of why we ranch. And I really don't think that probably needs a lot of explanation. You know, we all want to be able to build something that we're proud of. We want to be able to carry on something that we're proud of. We want to be able to create opportunities for others. So I think that's all wrapped up in the succession planning piece. So it might be overstretched to say it's everything, but it's almost everything, right? So what does it look like when it's done well? I think, you know, what it's going to do is it's going to build some confidence in the outgoing generation that they're not going to be left in a vulnerable situation. It's going to help the incoming generation develop competencies so that they can lead the business through challenging times that'll be sure to come. I think we're going to create a culture of, you know, that we're not here forever, right? And that we pass this on at the times when people are still ripe to lead a business, still willing to take risks, still aggressive in their business management. But that we also create a culture that we don't just kick people out, right? And we don't leave them in a lurch. So I think that's how it's, when it's done right, that's what it does, is it creates that kind of culture.
So you made an interesting statement that it's everything, or, you know, it's a big portion of it, you know, and if it doesn't necessarily need explained why it matters, but it doesn't always get done well, right? I mean, it doesn't always get done in a way that builds confidence in the outgoing generation that things are going to keep going, and it builds competency in the younger generation that they're going to be able to lead when the time comes. So I agree that it doesn't need a lot of explanation, but why doesn't it get done well? You know, if we all understand the importance of passing on a legacy to the next generation, why doesn't it get done well in some cases?
So I think one of the slides we show at the school, which you might remember, Clay, is that of those businesses that want to pass their ranch on intact to the next generation, only about a third of them are successful in doing this. Right. So this was done when they asked a group of people, okay, do you want to pass your farm, your ranch on intact to the next generation? And of those that said, yes, we do, they came back and followed up with them. And they found that only a third were successful in doing that. And I think that probably still holds today from the time that study was done. So why is our failure rate, I guess, if you wanted to call it that, why is the failure rate almost 66% or so high, right? And I think we can, as we look into that and come back to it, there's a few things we can put our finger on. Number one is that the business isn't viable in the first place. It's not able to do that because it's not a viable business. It relies on things like off-farm income, a workload that isn't attractive, right? So if it takes 60 hours a week, every week out of the year to keep the thing going, and somebody has to work in town to keep the bills going on the place. It's really no surprise that the next generation isn't clamoring to come back and be a part of that. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think there's number one is that the business isn't viable in the first place. Number two is we don't know how to talk about this stuff. I mean, I think we've said it before on here. People don't get into ranching because they are good with people, right? Think, well, gee, I really love being around people. I want to get into ranching for that reason. So we don't know how to talk about this stuff, and we need to build the skills to be able to do that. And then I think the next part is that the incoming generation is incompetent. And I don't mean that they're incompetent, meaning that they're not smart and they're not hardworking. They're extremely smart and they're extremely hardworking, but they're not competent to run a business, right? They're very competent in raising livestock and in growing crops, but running a business is a different set of skills from raising livestock and growing crops. So we need to help develop some competency in that incoming generation. And sometimes they're following incompetence. I mean, they're stepping into a situation that's been created from incompetence in the generation before them. So that's going to require even a higher level. So I think that's part of it, is we don't have the skills to do it. Our businesses are not structured to succeed in the first place. So we need to develop the skills to have these difficult conversations. And maybe difficult might even be, I mean, they're going to be challenging, but I think sometimes we build these things up in our mind to be more than they really should. I mean, what it really boils down to is asking questions and listening, and that shouldn't be that difficult on its face, but it is. So I think that's why that success rate is so low.
I heard a stat one time, and you'll understand where I'm going with this. I heard a stat one time, 90% of all statistics are made up on the spot. But, 90% of what we worry about never really comes to pass. And I think that sometimes what we are worried about in the conversation is something that the other person's worried about too, but they think they're the only one thinking about these things. They're the only one worried about these things. And so they don't want to start that conversation because they think that nobody else is worried about it or thinking about it in those regards. Does that match with your experience?
It does. Yeah. And the longer we put something off, the more we tend to build it up in our own mind about, all the things that could go wrong about this, all the sensitivities to it. And we start telling ourselves a story and kind of psyching ourselves up for it, right? Rather than just, let's deal with this and let's make these conversations a regular part of how we do business.
So you mentioned kind of some roadblocks, some barriers to this process. And one of them was unviable businesses. And I think one of the things that would make an unviable business is a business that is kind of eating up equity by not charging, not charging their cows to graze their grass or not taking into account depreciation in all of its different forms and some of those things. Is there a way to structure that business so that the so that it is more viable as far as taking into account some of those things? Or what are some of the tools, I should say, maybe is a better way to say it. What are some of the tools to take some of those things into account so that the business is viable, so we can pass on a healthy business to the next generation?
Yeah. The tools to do it are the things we've been talking about for decades now. Figuring out how to look inside your business, figuring out what's working, what's not working, and then developing a plan for moving forward. I don't think in the 20 plus years I've been doing this, I've ever come across a business where there was not a solution, an economic solution, right? Where we couldn't find a way to help this thing create whatever ownership wanted it to do, right? So I think sometimes people build that up in their mind that, oh, there's just no way to make this work. And there's almost always a way to make it work. Now, that being said, you're not going to say, well, we're going to run 100 cows the way we've always run them and provide enough family living for five families on the thing. I mean, there's some economic realities into it. But if you took a place and said, okay, we want to make this place cash flow, we want to make it support our lives, what are some ways we could do that, right? We're overlaying some creative things on there, bringing some ideas to the table, vetting those ideas, figuring out which ones have merit, and then developing, timeline plans of here's the things we're going to execute to move this thing forward. That's the way we do it. It's look into the business, figure out what's working, figure out what's not working, get after it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's really good. I think that it's more about, am I willing to make a change? Like you just said, you've never come across a business or don't remember a business that couldn't have been made to work economically. And that difference between economics and finance, of the economics being, is it profitable? And then the finance being, how do we pay for it? Like that economic piece is the one that we miss. The finance is the cash flow. And we cash flow. It's okay. Well, but we're economically losing value and eating up equity. But you're saying that most of businesses could work economically if we were willing to make a change, maybe in the structure of the business or what it is that the business is, even, go from cow calf to custom grazing or something like that.
Right. Yeah, you got it. We oftentimes come at these things and put ourselves into a no-win situation where we say, well, we want to keep doing what we've always done the way we've always done it, but yet we want very different results, right? So how can I continue to run these cows in this way, but make the business make me $300,000 a year more, right? So that's the wrong way to look at it, right? What's the end result? And then let's start talking about strategies to get there.
Sure. Yeah. And in the realm of difficult discussions, we maybe another episode is an episode where we can go without mentioning the book Crucial Conversations. But are there some tools as far as the difficult discussions that you would recommend, or some strategies to overcome those difficulties? And I know that maybe that's not the right word, but just loaded or weighty discussions, uncomfortable. I think there's other ways we could talk about it. But are there some tools and strategies that you've seen work well in overcoming some of those things?
There sure are. So Crucial Conversations is one book. Let's throw a few others in there. Getting to Yes, understanding how to do effective negotiations. Stephen Covey's Seven Habits has a lot of things that come into this about how to effectively listen, how to engage in these kind of conversations where before somebody's interested in what you know, right? You need to be sure that you've heard what they and understand their position, right? So a lot of that comes out in those. So what are ways to do this? I mean, just some nuts and bolts kind of tools are, come with your intentions and be able to put those on the table and your concerns, right? Hey, I'm worried that when we have these conversations, it's going to affect our relationships. And the last thing in the world I want us to do is pull each other apart as a family. You know, that's not what I want to have. But what I do want to come to is I want to deepen our understanding of where we're headed and the plan that we're headed to keep this place intact, to make the business viable. Right. So I don't want to damage our family relationships, but yet we need to find some paths forward to make the business viable. Right. So starting with those kind of a statements are really going to put things out there for where you're coming from, what you do want to have happen, but then also what you don't want to have happen.
I think that, you know, for example, from my own life, just this morning, I had a difficult business conversation with someone outside of my business, my family business. And so I think this probably has as much to do with my personality type as anything, but I tend to walk away from those those conversations and those discussions, kind of dissatisfied, like, oh, I didn't say that. Or more generally, the case is whenever I take that conversation that I just had and I submit it to some criticism, through somebody else, and I say, oh, this is a conversation I just had, other things come, you know, other angles, other ways of looking at it come to mind. And I'm like, I become less satisfied with the outcome of the conversation than I was before. So, or was when I was in the heat of the moment. So I guess, is there some resources or some strategies for kind of getting the most out of those conversations? Or is it kind of back to the thing that we again tend to mention quite often? We're just not going to always be very good at this when we get started, and we got to continue to practice, but also give ourselves margin to not be very good at it when we're getting started.
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying there. And we've all been in that situation, right? That happens to me too, where you feel like, so the ones where I feel like I do better and the outcomes are the ones where I give it some more thought ahead of time. You know, what's the outcome I'm looking for here? What are the things I'm not willing to compromise? And I'll even take out a piece of paper and write those things down ahead of time, right? Some people almost like to write a letter ahead of time to say, this is what I want to say. And that way you can choose your words, have some opportunity to choose your words a bit more carefully. I think in the moment, a good thing to do is to remember to ask more questions than what you make statements. And if you can think of some good questions to ask of the other person, you know, like, what's the outcome you're looking for here? You know, and how do you think we could make that happen? And, you know, what are some, and spend more of your time questioning before you start making statements. Generally that helps you better understand where they're coming from and helps that conversation go well.
Yeah, no, actually one of the resolutions I thought of after the conversation was, well, maybe I could just say it in an email a little bit more succinctly and choose my words carefully. But here you are saying, you know, before you have the conversation, write the letter, you know, and get, you know, get some of those things down on paper. That's a really helpful nugget, I think. So appreciate that. As far as incompetency, we're just kind of working through these roadblocks that you mentioned earlier. As far as incompetency in the younger generation, attending Wrenching for Profit or whatever is a good way to get some competencies. But what are some other ways to get some competencies built up in the younger generation? And when is it realistic to start expecting them to have some of the competencies they need to start stepping into those roles?
So when is it realistic? I think when that person enters into the ranch in some kind of an employment role, right? If they're taking on some more major responsibilities with the ranch or want to work into that, then we need to start treating them as such, right? And the hard thing is when it's junior, right? And when junior's been 12 and, you know, growing up on the ranch and then was 15 and, you know, had those duties. Well, then all of a sudden we turn around and they're 20 and they're 21 and we're still treating them like they're 12 or they're 15, right? At the kind of the go do this, go do that things rather than starting to step back and say, okay, here's the outcomes that we want you to produce. Now, why don't you come up with a plan for how you're what the strategy is to produce these outcomes, right? So, for example, if Junior's always been responsible for, okay, hey, I want you to, your job this winter is to feed the cows, right? Two bales to this group, two bales to that group, right? Whatever the number might be, that's pretty low level. Okay. So why don't we come up with a way of saying, okay, the outcome of this is that the cows are in good body condition at the end of winter so that they can have their calves, they can get rebred. So we think they need to be in a body condition score 5 by the 1st of May, whatever that is, right? Why don't you come up with a plan to accomplish that? Okay. Now, here's the way we've done it in the past. And these are some budgets that I think would be helpful for you. You know, we generally spend $150 a cow from the 1st of January. So, you know, why don't you come up with a plan with these parameters and this in your toolbox to do that? And I'd love for you to present me that plan 30 days from now. Do you think you could do that? Right. Okay. So here's the plan. We're looking at it together. Boy, I really like these components you came up with. But I'm a little bit worried about this, right? Can you research that some more? Can we look into this a bit more? Maybe could you develop an alternative here? Okay, great. Now you've presented that. Boy, I feel really good about this plan. You now have authority to implement this plan. Okay. And here's how we're going to watch this. Here's going to be our caveats, right? We're going to body condition score cows the end of January, the end of February to make sure we're on track for this. You know, we're going to be monitoring these things that we're going to be looking at, right? So that's a different level of developing competency in somebody than just feed this group 2 bales, feed that group 2 bales, right? So we're going to expect them to come up with plans. We're going to share with them how we're going to hold them accountable to producing those results. We're going to give them authority to develop those plans and autonomy on implementing them. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about here is to develop competency in that generation to lead that business. I mean, because if we want the business to be successful, we're going to have to give them some autonomy, some authority, and some abilities to develop those. You know, another question might be let's say I was asking the hay feeding one is an example most ranch kids would be really comfortable stepping into. But what if it were, I want you to develop a economic plan for the ranch, right? Well, somebody might feel, well, I have no idea where to start on that. Okay, so what tools, training, skills are you going to need in order to do this? And how can we help you develop those, right? So that would be a good follow-up question to those kind of things.
Sure. You mentioned that these discussions get more difficult when it's junior, when the individual that's looking at the succession, at being the next in line for succession, shares a last name. So could you just talk a little bit about, from your perspective, what does my last name entitle me to as a manager or as a succession person or someone in a succession line?
Yeah. I can give you my take on that, but I think the more important thing is from your ranch's perspective, what is the policy for employing or hiring family members versus non-family members? What is your ranch's take on this? Okay, because my take is going to be different from your take, right? And if it's your ranch, if it's your business, it's your plan that we need to figure out how to work. So here would be some interesting questions. Okay, if the ranch is going to create positions for family members, how long are we willing to subsidize those positions before we call it an ineffective approach, right? So let's say Junior, it could be a he or a she, right, is expressed interest in coming back to the ranch, and we want to create an opportunity for them. But right now there isn't a position available. I mean, you know, we're currently filled up. Well, we might say as a family, you know what, we're willing to subsidize this $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 a year for the next 2 or 3 years while you establish a business on the ranch, while you take something that we're currently doing, add another enterprise to it, you know, whatever that might be. But at some point, we have to decide, is this worth moving forward with or not, right? So let's say we've decided, okay, we're willing to subsidize this $20,000, $30,000 each year for the next 2 or 3 years. And at the end of that point, then you have to show that you've created value to not only cover your position, but also to add value to the ranch, right? This isn't a break-even deal, right? We're not bringing you back so that, whew, we just barely broke even again, right? We want to build the business. So what bar is that we're setting? Okay. Another question might be, let's say the ranch actually has a position. We've got a position for a marketing director, 30% marketing director and 70% hired hand on the ranch, right? Here's what it pays. This is what the package is. You know, this is what the position is on the ranch. And now we're going to advertise that, and we're going to have four applicants put in. Three of them are non-family and one of them is family. How do we decide as a business to what preference do we give family, right? Are we going to consider all these exactly even just on the face of how they're applying, or are we going to say, no, we always give preference to family, and that preference is, 100%. So even if this person has no qualifications for this position, we're going to hire them because they're family. Is that the way our business approaches it? Or do we say, everything else being equal, we're going to hire family over, right? So I think those are the important questions for a business to address. And we call that developing your family employment policy. And it's essentially thinking through, putting on your hat as owners, right? We haven't had that conversation yet. I think that's an important one to have is there's different, most people wear those different hats on the ranch, right? Most people wear the labor hat. We're out there doing the work. Some people probably wear the manager hat. A lot of ranches are actually not managed. They're owned and labored. They're not managed. But somebody should be wearing the manager hat. And then, that ranch has an ownership group. And so at some point you need to put on your owner hat. So in this conversation, we ask you to put on your owner hat and say, okay, what is our family employment policy on this ranch? And that's really a responsibility for owners to think through these questions I'm asking. Write this thing up, and it can be less than a page. But you need to be deliberate about that so that when the time comes and a family member wants to work on the ranch, what's the policy, right? What are we going to lean back on? How are we going to make that decision? And so that's what we suggest, is to have that written family employment policy for your business.
That's one of the things that I appreciated from the school when I attended the Ranching for Profit school. Was I think one of the first things, or really early on in the school, you kind of emphasized that point about there is no recipe, right? And that's kind of what you're talking about here. There isn't a recipe. You could give me your take on what my last name entitles me to as far as management or as far as succession, asset transition, management transition is, what my last name entitles me to as far as those things are concerned. But really the more important thing is not giving people a recipe. And I appreciate that. I think that's an important thing that probably early on in this podcast, as I was in my zealot phase, I probably didn't get that part of it. And I probably didn't do a very good job of communicating that.
Yeah, it is. I think it's part of that maturing phase, right? When I was at some point, I was out there looking for that recipe as well, right? Show me how to run this profitable ranch. What genetics do I need? When do I need to calve, right? And after a while you realize, well, that really doesn't exist, because this person's doing it this way and being successful. This person's doing it that way. So as we start looking underneath that, what are the principles that we follow, right? And so that's what we tend to talk about, are the principles around that business management. And I've got a list of things here just around succession, and I think principles might be a strong word for them, but definitely practices. There's some best practices around these things, we won't have time to hit on all of them today, but just to get your listeners thinking about some questions in their mind around succession. Of course, the fair versus equal question, right? And that's got some complication built into it, right? And fair is not equal, but the ownership needs to decide how they're going to address that. It's not right to say, well, the on-farm person should get more, because the situations are all different, right? But it's also probably not right to say, well, everybody should just divide it up all equal, right? So what is the business strategy on that? How is your business going to handle that? Legacy. Oh my gosh, there's so much built into legacy, right? When you ask people, well, why do you want to do succession planning? One of the answers we come and get is, well, to carry on the legacy. Okay, well, what is the legacy? Let's define that. Let's look into it. And when you start looking into that and unpacking it, it's a heck of a lot more than stuff. I'll tell you that. You know, and when people start talking about legacy, they often think about the asset. Well, it's so much more than the asset. If it were just an asset, it would be easy, right? But it goes so much deeper than the asset. So one of the things the family employment policy, we mentioned that. Retirement. Now, this is a big one, retirement. What's the plan for the ranch around retirement? Is it just we all stay here in charge until the day we die, right? The day we fall over dead? Or is there a stepped out or a strategy developed to step people out of certain roles and developing people to walk into those? So when you start thinking about retirement, there's three critical things that you need to address. There's role, control, and money. Okay, role, control, and money. What is your role in the business? How much control do you need? So the retiring generation, do they need to have like a chairman of the board kind of position where they have the opportunity to veto major strategic level changes? Or are they willing to take a lesser control, right? I'm willing to go along with this. And then the money part is about security, right? So how do we create financial security for the outgoing generation? So that if you're stepping into the management of this and you make a major faux pas, you're not risking dad and mom's retirement money in doing that, right? So they've got some financial security around that. These are the things we play with a lot around succession are those pieces. And then we get into the nuts and bolts around developing strategies for each of those, vetting those strategies, looking into them and saying, okay, which of these have merit, which of these don't, what are the upsides, what are the downsides, what are ways to develop those.
And you've got a management or a succession planning seminar coming up along those lines in the near future. Is that right?
We do. So this has kind of been our development of this. In teaching ranching for profit, we have about like a 2-hour time slot that we talk about succession. And there's so much in here to unpack that we just can't do a good job in that time slot talking about it. We can touch on a lot of these things and then we move on and come back to them at the end of the week. And in facilitating executive link meetings for the last several years, the succession piece makes up a big chunk of those conversations that happen in executive link. And so we wanted some type, and we've been asked to do this by different groups. And Dave and I have put on some 3-day succession programs that were just on management succession in the business. And we've had kind of a trial run at doing these a few times, and we really liked where they were headed. We had to shave off a few of the rough edges and then develop and Dave Pratt has taken the lead on developing the curriculum on this. So we're proud to roll this thing out. It's ready to go. It's been years in the making. And we're going to offer our first multi-day succession planning workshop that's being done, in-house RMC. It's going to be September 29th through October 1st this year in Cheyenne. And there's some important things about this. For one of the things, it's going to be people from all over the country that are traveling to a location to spend time focused on this part of their business. So we're not going to, Rapid City and doing this for people within a 100-mile radius of Rapid City, right? Because the conversations you need that are going to happen at this workshop are going to be things that you need to be in a safe place to talk about them, right? So it's going to have a lot of diversity among the people that are there, and be able to really dive in at a deep level. And that's one reason why we've limited it to businesses that have been to ranching for profit is when you have that shared experience, you have a deeper level of trust that you're willing to engage on those deeper level conversations with. So this first one is going to be limited to businesses that are graduates of ranching for profit. That means if you're, let's say your mom and dad took the school 20 years ago, your business is eligible, right? So if the business has sent somebody to ranching for profit, you're eligible to come. And I mean, Dave is an amazing curriculum developer, and he's been given a lot of thought to what are the outcomes of this workshop. So people are going to leave with a written outline for their succession plan. Right. And most of what we're going to be talking about is the managerial succession plan. How do we pass on control, development of the business, roles in the business, leadership of the business? We're definitely going to talk about asset succession some. And so when we say asset succession, we're talking more about estate planning things. Right. We've got a gentleman coming that's pretty big expert on structure of these things. So he'll be available for people to sit down and ask their questions too. But the management part of it to me is the one that is really tricky in developing. The asset succession part is, I mean, really that boils down to the owners need to decide what they want to do. They need to take action to set that up, and then they need to communicate that plan with everybody. I mean, that's the asset succession part, but the management succession part is so much more tricky and challenging to get right. So everybody's going to leave with a draft succession plan that's written down. You know, we've structured it to encourage multiple people from a business to come together. We hope businesses will bring representatives of the different generations, be there focused with that time to have those conversations. We're going to have both Dave and myself there to kind of serve in some facilitative roles. We'll be around in the afternoons and evenings to work with families one-on-one during those times, that are doing this stuff. And, you know, this is such a high value piece in the business, and it's so critical to get it right. We're going to be able to offer a lot of value in this and help businesses make some decisions to move forward on this.
Very good. I think you answered all the questions I had anticipated wanting to ask as far as the seminar itself. You know, first of all, who can come, alumni of RFP, who should come, multiple generations from each business, and then some of the things that you'll be covering. So I think that's a real good outline. Really glad that's happening. You said it's been years in the making. I think I probably heard the pitch for one of the first iterations of this in Bags, Wyoming. Am I right? Probably in early 2020 or early 2018, maybe, or late 2017.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. That was one of the first ones we did. And it kind of let us get our feet wet in working in this arena. We did another one in Malta, Montana a couple years ago. I think Dave's done one on his own since then. But this is the first one that RMC is really putting our brand on and doing it in-house. So we're happy to offer this. I mean, I remember riding with a gentleman in Australia and really successful, well-known Australian rancher. And he had his daughter and his son-in-law on the ranch with him. And I was asking him about some succession things. And he told me, well, we've been very deliberate about the succession piece. And he said, we've actually brought in facilitators to help us have these conversations. And we're bringing in consultants to help us structure the business, financial consultants, tax accounting folks. And I said, well, what have you invested in the succession piece? And he said, oh, probably in the neighborhood of $50,000. Right. And I kind of stepped back and I went, wow, that's pretty significant. And he turned to me, and I was sitting in the back seat of the car and he was in the front driving, and he turned to me and he said, no, you don't understand. If I don't get this right, it's all for nothing. You know, and I was kind of stepped back, and he said that $50,000 is a drop in the bucket. Right. And he was drilling me on this thing. And he said, if I don't get this piece right, he said, where's the business going to be in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now? And that impressed upon me, you know, it wasn't the monetary value, but it was his recognition that this is a critical part of the business to spend time on and to really make sure you have some pieces in place that are going to keep the ball moving on this. So So anyway, hopefully we can play a role in that and help people make some significant progress towards putting together this plan for what's the estate going to be. But then I think more importantly, who's going to be making the decisions on it.
Yeah. And if I we're recording this on the Friday, I think the email announcing this went out yesterday or maybe the day before, but in the history of what I've seen ranching for profit or ranch management consultants promote, things have tended to fill up pretty quickly. Have you had any interest on it yet?
Yeah, we've got several enrollments already. So the challenge of this is we're doing enrollments by the business. And so a business might bring four people, right? If you're going to bring, or even six or eight people, who knows how many people that business is going to bring. So we really don't know what kind of space we have. We're making space for 48 people, but that doesn't let us know how many businesses there might be room for, right? So we're going to take registrations until we get close to that 48, right? If we're sitting at 46 people and a business calls and says, hey, we want to come and we're going to bring four, right? We'll say, all right, come on, and then we'll close it right mm-hmm. behind them. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what the how quickly it'll fill up. I do anticipate there's going to be some strong positive response to it, but this is kind of our first run of this, so we'll wait and see.
Sure. Sounds good. Yeah. So this will be out kind of the Monday after it was announced. And so should still be some room, but take advantage of the opportunity if you have the time. I got a couple of questions that came in from the private Facebook group. I usually like to download these and put them on my production studio equipment here, but I didn't get time. This one just came in, so I'm going to try and play it out of my Google Voice mailbox and see how that works. And if you can, I'll watch. If you can't hear it, I'll try to relay the gist of it.
Hey, Clay. My name is Cooper Gordon from Tulare, South Dakota. And my question for Dallas is, as a young producer, 25 years old, with a small family, what steps should I be taking into succession planning, or how should I be going about it? Thanks.
Cool. Yeah, I appreciate him being proactive on this at a young age. I don't know that he needs to structure the thing to say, well, here's going to be the role for the next generation at this point in his life, right? But I do think modeling that appropriate business behavior and having the kids come up in a business that has a culture of examining things and asking tough questions and a culture of continued professional development, I think that can really set a good stage for those young people to grow up in and to see that maybe they want to choose to have a career that points them back to agriculture. Maybe they'll choose to go off and do other amazing things that will have nothing to do with agriculture, right? And good for them if that's the choice that they make. So I think at this stage in life, just let's develop the business to be economically strong, to have a healthy work-life balance, to be able to spend those times with the kids. And then I would bring them in on some of that business strategy that he and hopefully his spouse are doing together, or whoever the people involved in the business are, right? That are, when they're looking at things like mission and vision and roles in the business and looking at the economic side of the business, I'd bring those young people in on those conversations so that they have a glimpse that it's more than just doing cowboy stuff, right? There's another big piece to it.
Sure. I got another great question from Mal Peterson. And he says this, if the succession has happened and wasn't planned or understood by all involved or wasn't planned out, and now have multiple individuals with different objectives, where do you start? It's not a sweat equity issue, but there were legal documents of ownership and inheritance signed, and the succession of the management wasn't clear, but the assets were. So, sounds like kind of already happened. Management wasn't necessarily clear, but the assets were clearly laid out. Where would you start in a situation like that?
Yeah, good question, Mal. And something that happens quite often. So this is where you need to bring everybody together with that's got an ownership hat on, right? And take the current management out of the question, right? So let's say there's, I'm going to make some things simple. Let's say there's three siblings, okay? And one of them is currently kind of the management person, the one that's out there running most of the cows or whatever there are. Okay. So have the three siblings come together, but don't bring the burden of, well, so-and-so is the one currently doing it all. Right. And set these three siblings down and say, okay, what do we want? You know, what do we want these assets to be? Now, maybe there's some ownership in common. Maybe there's some individual ownerships in different places, but let's start with those, with that big question of, you know, in our perfect world, what would we want this thing to be 3, 5, 10 years from now? Okay. And let's start coming up with some shared objectives, right? So we want a place that that stays connected to our family heritage, that the kids can come back to and enjoy. We want to produce good financial results from it. We want the land to be healthy, right? Whatever these kind of things are. And then we'll step back from it and say, okay, now that we've got a clear understanding of where we're headed, what are the different things we could do to create that end? Okay. Well, we could lease it out to so-and-so, right? And maybe they could run the whole thing for us. We could create this land entity where we lease it out and all of us, the three of us, have the opportunity to bid, and we're going to bring in other bids from other people as well. So I think you need to kind of go back and put those ownership hats on and start creating some of those questions and those shared understandings of where we're headed. If it's you really want to do this well, bring in some outside people and put them on that kind of a board of directors for the land holding company, if you would, and help have those outside people. They're going to create a level of professionalism to it, some accountability to that. And really start looking into those things. And so maybe then one of the siblings gets a lease on it. So now there's a land company that has these things and these objectives. And now we're leasing to this operator who happens to be a sibling, right? So I would treat those transactions with as you would with anybody, even if you weren't dealing with a sibling. So let's have a written lease. Let's have terms to that lease. Let's talk about the objectives that we're trying to meet. Let's price it so that it's fairly close to competitive market value, right? So nobody feels like they're getting a free ride or nobody feels like they're getting cheated out of something. So I think Mal's question is great. You really kind of need to come back to the drawing board with it, step away from this is the way it's always been done, and come back with a fresh perspective of what do we want to create here.
Early on in this episode, you mentioned some things and it was in my mind to ask you, and I got sidetracked, but now you brought it back around. And I think that one of the things that I've heard a lot of RMC talk about, the High Plains Ranch Practicum talked about it, is separating the land business from the operating business. And that seems to be a huge piece of this as well, is it not?
It is. It's a common strategy that we find people use to create a mechanism around some of these succession things, right? So I wouldn't look at it as a prescription. I don't think everybody needs to do it, but we do find this is a common approach. And so what we find are that land asset that's an easier piece to have held by a large number of people. Right. So if you're now on the third generation of passing a ranch down, it maybe you've got 15, 20 or 50 people that now have an ownership stake in that. Okay. So we found a successful strategy of that is to have those people be owners of that land asset base. So the land asset is going to have a few questions in front of it, right? What are we going to do? All right. Or which part of this are we going to manage? If we're going to have an operating business on this, are we going to run that? Are we going to own that? Or are we just going to lease it to somebody to run that? And the better answer oftentimes is to lease it to somebody else, right? And let them run it. So then we start saying, okay, what kind of leasee are we looking for? What kind of results are we looking for them to produce? And then if there's like on-farm family that are doing it, it's a better role for them to be the lessors to that land business, right? So then they are holding the risk of, okay, what kind of enterprises are we going to run? When are we going to calve? How much are we going to feed? What kind of equipment inventory are we going to have on hand? They're the ones that are making those day-to-day decisions that they're going to be the ones impacted by, right? And so if they set a business up that's going to be highly successful, well, then they've got the opportunity to enjoy that success. If they're going to build a business that is not successful, then they're going to be the ones to pay the price for that, right? So it really creates a lot more autonomy for the people that are there on the ground doing those decisions. I mean, you don't want your cousin that lives clear across the country to be deciding what kind of protein supplement you need to feed, right? That's not their role. You need to have the responsibility and accountability to do that yourself.
Yeah, very good. I think we started out really strong with that idea of we're building confidence in the outgoing generation. We're building competency in the incoming generation. And I appreciate you coming prepared today with some notes. Is there anything else that we haven't covered today that you really think needs said in this context?
You know, the more difficult things around this are the questions of in-laws, of spouses, and, you know, how is the business going to treat those folks, what kind of security role ownership are we going to create for the family as it gets larger? And I think those are where some of the more difficult conversations happen around the succession conversation. So I would want to, if you're listening to this and you're in the current ownership generation, right? I want to impress upon you the desire for clarity. You asked me a question, Clay. You said, what am I owed with my last name? I think you're owed some clarity, you know, and so I really want to impress upon those that are in that controlling generation now that the people that are involved with them underneath them are desperate for some clarity and for some conversations around what is the plan. Right. And even if you think they're not going to be 100% happy with the plan, boy, tell it to them anyway, you know, because they're making decisions now about what they're going to do with some of their most marketable years of their life. Right. So if they're in their 20s and they choose to stay on the ranch for the next 15 years, right, how able are they to go on to a different career at that stage in life, right? Not very. So they really need some clarity now so that they can make those decisions with all the information in front of them. If somebody's listening to this and they're in that younger generation, looking up and wondering, well, what's going to happen, right? And or maybe they're an in-law who married into the ranch and wondering, what kind of security is there here for me if my spouse that's a family member has a tragic accident, right? What would happen next to me? I think they really need to ask those questions from a place of love, right? Not from a place of, well, boy, I need my piece of the pie, but from, hey, I really appreciate being here. This is such a blessing to be able to be a part of what's come before us and to have a role in carrying this on. It's my responsibility to my family to make sure that they're taken care of. So I need some clarity on this and I need you guys to help me understand what the plan is. And if the answer is, well, we're not going to say, well, I think you need to act accordingly then. Right.
Yep.
Whether you choose to stay not knowing or whether you choose to look for something else.
So. Very, very good. Very helpful. One of the things that comes up in the course of the Ranching for Profit School is the 5 D's, you know, what happens, especially like you mentioned with in-laws, you know, somebody who's married into the family, what happens to them in the case of death, disability, disaster, divorce, disagreement, you know, those are some things that, you know, aren't necessarily comfortable to discuss, but they can really save even more heartache on down the line if we're willing to discuss them on the front end. So I think bringing in that in-law piece is great. And just to make another pitch for this succession planning seminar is, first of all, it's pennies on the dollar. I've looked at what it costs to bring in succession planning gurus to do a half day workshop, and this is pennies on the dollar. It's a incredible value. Secondly, the opportunity to be in the room with potentially some people who went through Ranching for Profit 30 years ago, and now they're in their, you know, mid to late 70s, and to talk to them and to get their perspective and to go and sit in the hotel bar with them after the session. I think that's a pretty incredible value too. So I think that's a really neat opportunity.
I appreciate that, Clay. And so, you know, just to build on this stuff a little bit where we ended with these difficult questions. So what you need to address those are, you need some processes and some tools. And at the seminar, we're going to dive deep into things like, how do we use an implications wheel to think through these decisions, right? So what if so-and-so was involved in a tragic accident, right? What might happen to the ranch? And so we use the implications wheel to think through those, right? Or, you know, another tool we're going to put in front of folks is the decision grid. So let's say we've got some different strategies that we're evaluating. So we could do this, direction A, we could do direction B or direction C. So how do we evaluate those three different strategies, and how do they fit in with our core values, with our mission, with where we want to be, and really be able to think through those in a rational and well-developed process. And we're going to be doing those kind of nuts and bolts things at the seminar. So, but yeah, I appreciate you having this conversation. I got to listen to the episode you did with Elaine a few episodes back, and she had some really good things to add. And, you know, I just appreciate that we're getting these kind of conversations in front of farmers and ranchers, and hopefully putting some tools in front of them and some encouragement to deal with these things. Cause it's been too long. It's been too long that these kind of things just go not discussed. And it breaks my heart that those of us that are so fortunate to work in this industry and to be able to enjoy this thing, it breaks my heart that those of us with the assets in this, these assets too often tear families apart. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, how can you make it to where these are bringing people together instead of tearing them apart? And I think learning how to have these conversations around these things in productive ways is the key to this.
Right. Something more than, I don't know where this originally came from, if it was at the High Plains Ranch Practicum that I heard it, but something more than the Lion King succession plan, go up on the hill and say, someday this will all be yours, you know. But also, the best part of that Elaine Fraze episode was when she stopped me in the middle of my story and said, let's tell better stories. And, you know, this seminar, I think I've been calling it a seminar, it's probably a workshop, but whatever, this event is a tool for us to be able to tell better stories. So
yeah, I appreciate her when she stopped you in that. And I thought, boy, there's a skilled facilitator, right? Somebody that can say, okay, now wait a minute, stop right there. We're going to tell different stories. So, because yeah. I was with you, man, I was down in the weeds, groveling on, you know, you know, and so often this stuff doesn't work. And she just put the brakes on that.
It was beautiful. I thanked her for it then, and I think I thanked her for it later. So anyways, DallasRanchManagement.com, best place to send people in the show notes page, workingcows.net/198.
Yep. If you click on our schedule button at the top right there, it'll take you to the page where the succession workshop is linked, and you can read all about it there and get more information. So even if you don't come to the workshop, you know, dive into this stuff, guys. I want to encourage you to have the courage to lead these conversations in your business. Be willing to be vulnerable with each other about talking about what are you worried about in these things? What are your desires? What are your hopes? And be willing to put things on the table because that's where we'll make progress.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Dallas, for your time today.
All right. Thanks, Clay.
Very good stuff. Really appreciate that, and would encourage you to check out the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/198, to look at the opportunities that are there to sign up for this course. Again, recommend doing so sooner rather than later, but take the opportunity as it comes. And also, would like to tell you, coming up next week on the Working Cows podcast, I think we're going to be talking to Shannon Sims. Shannon was originally scheduled to be the guest for episode number 3, but he was unable to join me to talk about windrow grazing. His wife Melinda stepped in and did a fantastic job, but it's taken me nearly 200 episodes to get Shannon back on the show, not because of any scheduling conflict, just hadn't reached out to him, but I'm really looking forward to him, really have appreciated. I saw Shannon and Melinda originally share at the High Plains Ranch Practicum on that first 2-day session of the High Plains Ranch Practicum, kind of the 2 days that started it all as far as the Working Cows podcast is concerned, and my journey of out of the box thinking and those things, and Shannon and his wife came in at the end of those first 2 days and kind of put a cap on it. And I still remember hearing them talk about how they want to capture so much water that they don't have any runoff, so their dams dry up, and then they want to raise the water table so much that those dams fill up from the bottom up. And so just a great family, really appreciate them, really appreciate their model of business and some of those things. And I'm sure we'll talk about all that. But the main nugget that we're going to focus on with Shannon is transitioning to a closed herd. And so really excited about that. So look forward to another episode of the Working Cows podcast coming your way real soon.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.